So Tim Versalotti is director of the Western New England University Poll, professor of political science, my friend, a friend of the radio station, and a very bright man. So solve a little question I have. What are the effects of the conflict with Iran that we're now experiencing on public attention towards impeachment? There are those of us who think that it may well be that this was purposeful on the part of the president to get the impeachment monkey off his back.
Well, there is that, let's call that the wag the dog theory, that you create a foreign policy crisis to try and draw attention away from domestic politics where you might be having some trouble. It is interesting to watch this confluence of events in the sense that two things are going on here. One, the Senate has not settled on rules for the impeachment trial, and so that has pushed the process on a back burner of sorts. But two, you've got a couple of arguments from the Republicans as to why at this point in time the country should not be focused on the trial and instead should be focused on national security. That's an argument that the president's supporters in the Senate are making, also supporters outside the Senate as well. And well, it's early days. It's a lot will depend in part on the next development in the situation with Iran. Iran has spoken of retaliation and in particular focusing on military targets. And that could continue to draw attention away from domestic politics, depending on what transpires.
Well, you know, Mr. Pulser, I guess the question in blue state Massachusetts, with so many Democrats and so many anti-Trumpers, whether or not you're picking up anything on your antennae that indicates that this impeachment thing is not going well for Trump.
Well, when we look at polling, and we don't have polling data from Massachusetts since the House vote on impeachment a few weeks ago, but when you look nationally, the country is fairly evenly divided on the issue, with a slight plurality saying that they support the impeachment process. And depending on the polling you're looking at, almost an even split or a slight plurality saying that they believe the president should be removed from office. And so there is this sense, and that's been somewhat of a shift in recent months, certainly since the proceedings in the House, that there is some public support for this, but also a fair amount of wait and see in terms of what is presented at the trial, if and when, well, when a trial occurs in the Senate, if the Senate Republicans don't succeed in simply dismissing the charges right away. So we do see some public sentiment, at least in favor of playing this out and seeing what all the facts are and hearing the arguments.
So there are several states, actually three or four, which, because of the intricacies of the Electoral College, ended up meaning that Trump won. Have you been keeping your eye on the polling in those states?
There hasn't been a whole lot of general election polling in the states that we're thinking of. And in particular, one could argue the states that tipped the balance last time, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin. We could expand that map to include Florida, Ohio, North Carolina, possibly Iowa, Minnesota. What we're instead seeing is a fair amount of national polling. And in fact, earlier this week, Morning Consult came out with some national numbers matching up the leading Democrats against President Trump. And These are early matchups. It's hard to put a lot of stock in them. They're of all registered voters, and Democrats tend to do better among all registered voters than among that smaller sample of likely voters. What we're seeing, though, among the front runners, only Joe Biden has enough of a lead on Trump to overcome the structural disadvantages that Democrats have in the Electoral College. And what I mean by that is, so we saw Hillary Clinton win the popular vote by about 3 percentage points in 2016, but it wasn't enough to tip the balance in those close states, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. And the estimate is that in order for a Democrat to win the presidency, he or she is going to have to defeat President Trump by perhaps a minimum of 5 percentage points just to overcome that structural disadvantage in the Electoral College.
When you say structural disadvantage, what do you mean?
So Democrats run up huge margins in safe states like California and New York, and that allows them to win the popular majority. But they can come up just short in these critical battleground states. And so it's possible that they could win the popular vote, which has happened a couple of times now, and then lose the vote in the Electoral College. Al Gore did this in 2000. Hillary Clinton did this in 2016. So the challenge is to run the board to make up those very narrow deficits in the battleground states to overcome the bank of states that Republicans just can simply rely on year in, year out. These are smaller, less populous states, but you're guaranteed a certain number of electoral votes based on their seats in the House and the 2 seats in the Senate.
So I'm getting a lot of mail now, and the mail is saying, oh, he's going to win. Trump's going to win again. Trump's going to win again. Trump's going to win again. I hear it over and over again from many of the same people who told me that Trump couldn't win last time when I told him he could. Now, I'm asking you a question. Is that just sort of a cynicism or a disheartening effect? Or what do you make of all the people who think the guy is going to win? Because in some ways, it becomes the self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? And what we know is that incumbent presidents rarely lose when they seek that second term. There is a built-in advantage there in terms of fundraising. President Trump has done extremely well in his fundraising so far, and there's no reason not to expect that to continue. They have the power and prestige of the office, and let's face it, although there are pockets of the economy that are not doing well and wages should be rising a bit faster than they are, generally speaking, the economy is doing well, and everyone who got their fourth quarter 401k statements in the last week or so may have had some good news. And so those kinds of things can aid an incumbent president. And so however passionately Democrats feel about turning Trump out of office, it's still going to be a big challenge for them.
Is it your sense, however, that the people who voted for him last time are going to vote for him this time?
Well, there you are. So the Trump-Obama voters are the holy grail of this cycle. Finding those who had supported President Obama in 2008 and 2012, then switched to President Trump in 2016, what is the probability of getting them back in the Democratic column in 2020? These tend to be white men without college degrees who are frustrated, who look at their circumstances and look at the direction of the country and want something different, something new. And what Democrats are going to have to do with these voters is use that line that President Reagan used back in 1980, which was, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? Democrats just have to hammer that over and over and over again in the industrial Midwest, where we have had some bad news of plant closings and cutbacks, if they're ever going to win back what we call the Trump-Obama voters.
Okay, I have one real last question for you. I only have a minute. Baker is the governor of Massachusetts. He's a Republican. He's got to be in a very tricky situation in a state which so many people hate Trump's guts.
He's got to hold on to his supporters But at the same time, Republicans make up about 11% of the electorate in Massachusetts. He has to continue to find support among the very large independent voting bloc, which is more than half the voters in Massachusetts. So he's got to show, he's got to create some distance between himself and President Trump at opportune moments in order to maintain his public support. He's only 1 year into his second term. He's got a ways to go. It's unclear whether he would even seek a third term. But he's got this balancing act. What's in his favor is state revenues are strong. The unemployment rate is low in Massachusetts. His big Achilles heel is transportation, and that's going to continue to be his challenge in this term, fixing mass transit in and around Boston, fixing the T, doing something about infrastructure, improving the transportation connections from Western Massachusetts into Boston. That really should be his top priority moving forward.
Our guest has been Tim Versalotti, the brilliant, and I say it knowing what I'm saying, director of the Western New England University Poll, professor of political science, and a guy who really knows his stuff. Tim, thanks so much for being with us. When we come back the next time, I'm going to ask you about a whole bunch of candidates, and maybe you can give us some assessments.
I look forward to it.